I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
It's just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Young people often take gap years, which if you think about it, is a little odd given that they haven't lived that long. But an emerging thing is the middle-aged version. A year ago, Mark Graham and his partner Ellie put all the usual humdrum concerns on hold to leave Waterford and cycle around the world. Mark, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. No, actually, you're in Japan. What time of the day is it with you?
It's about 9:30, I think, coming up close to 10 o'clock at night. So it's nearly bedtime.
Ah, right. Okay. So it's rest time for the two of ye. Now, I suppose people listening will be wondering a number of things. Are you independently wealthy that you can do this?
No, not at all. Not at all. What we did before we did this, we've been planning this for a very long time, about 3 years. And for those 3 years, we worked 4 jobs for 3 years. And 2 of those jobs were that we renovated 2 double-decker buses and we converted them into tiny homes and we sold them. And that's what's funding this trip.
Right. And in terms of your home setup, like are there kids? Are there jobs you had to leave?
Ellie has 2 grown-up kids from a previous relationship, so they're in their 20s now. So, you know, you kind of hit on there the most difficult part of this journey. Cycling across deserts and cycling up mountains is hard, but leaving family and leaving home for a long period of time, I think that's the hardest part of this trip. And I know Ellie is finding that very hard, in particular with her kids and me with my mom and my sister and our families. That's the really difficult part of this. And our jobs, I'm a lecturer in SETU in Waterford, so I'm on a career break. I've taken 2 years out from my job, and Ellie's a freelance journalist, so she's just stopped working for the moment, and hopefully we'll be able to pick up everything again, and our families will take us back when we arrive home.
All right.
Hopefully that'll all work out.
And are Ellie's kids in your house?
Ellie's in, one of them is in Cork, and the other one is living in Cork City herself.
Ah, right. Okay. So you're not going to come back to a trashed house or anything when, you know, it can happen. So is this something that ye had been thinking about doing for a long time?
Yeah, we've been going on long cycling journeys now for over 10 years. And we'd take a week here or 2 or 3 weeks there. Like one time we went to Albania and down through Bosnia. And the most difficult part about those trips was stopping, because when we got to the end of them, we wanted to keep going. And we wanted to keep going so much that we started to hatch these plans. And in the back of our minds was the cyclist from Lismore County, Waterford, Dervla Murphy, who in 1960 set out from Waterford and cycled from Lismore to India. So we both read her books. So this was kind of in the back of our heads as well at the same time.
Yeah. And was it just something you fancied doing? Did it bear any relationship to your ordinary day-to-day life and that you were maybe feeling a bit sick of it and that kind of thing?
Not at all. No, I think part of it, you know, Ellie wrote about it well in the Irish Times at the weekend. Part of the idea about this midlife gap year is that we were both talking about this for a long time. And I think we were concerned that if we left this to when we retire, that maybe we wouldn't be able to do it, or maybe it would be a lot more difficult than it is now. And it's something we really wanted to do. And kind of an easy way that I'm describing this is, you know, life is short. And it's one of the things that's been driven home to us a lot while we're on this journey, is that if you keep putting things off to tomorrow, you know, maybe someday tomorrow won't come. So we kind of wanted to seize the day a bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you could say that about many things indeed. So how much planning, I mean, apart from having to work the 4 jobs to be able to fund it, how much planning did you have to do in terms of your route and all that kind of thing?
We do a lot of planning. You know, we've been dreaming and hatching plans, but I think one of the things you learn about this, you have to be kind of fluid as well, and you have to be able to roll with things as they happen. So as much planning as we've put into things, we've had to be able to adjust as circumstances change. Like an example of that is we're in Japan at the moment. We didn't plan on coming to Japan at all, but we found that we were going faster than we expected. And rather getting to British Columbia when it's still frozen, when there's still a lot of ice there, we've decided to do a stopover in Japan for 4 weeks and cycle around here.
Is that something in the planning stage you had to take into account, you know, whether it was going to be, you know, extremely cold or indeed extremely hot in parts of the places you were going through?
Absolutely, yeah. And we tried to take that into account. But I tell you one thing, Sean, I don't think there's any planning that you can do that's going to prepare you for 45 degrees in the desert in Kazakhstan. That was a shock to the system, I think. I think we were both a bit traumatized after that because we knew it was coming. And, you know, we started carrying all our gear, but then we'd also have to carry 8 to 10 liters of water as well. But by God, it was still a shock to the system. You know, it doesn't suit my red head, I tell you that, to be out in that kind of heat.
Presumably you packed the factor 40. Can you? Is there enough room on the bike for all that kind of stuff?
There is, yeah. And I've overpacked things. I have a concertina in the bag as well. And for somebody who's agnostic, I have 2 St. Christopher medals. I have 2 small bottles of holy water. I'm a St. Bridget's cross as well. So we're carrying some stuff that isn't exactly survival equipment. But we tried to carry everything that we needed. But it became obvious as we got to some places that we did need some more stuff. Like the desert is a good example. Like we needed to cover every part of ourselves when we were cycling through the desert. And I'm putting photographs up as we're going along and I'm sharing photographs with family and friends. And people are making fun of my legs that they're still white. You know, that we've been on the road just over a year now and we've been in some incredibly sunny and hot places. But I still have milk bottle legs.
Fair juice. Well done. That's preparation there. Have you played the concertina since you left Ireland?
Yeah. We've been doing a little bit. We had our first gig in a preschool in Vietnam, and they loved us. Went down a storm. We had a great audience there. But recently, we played a tune. We gave a talk in the Irish Embassy in Singapore for St. Bridget's Day, which was the 1 year anniversary of us heading off. So it was nice to talk to some Irish people and to hear some familiar accents in Singapore for St. Bridget's Day. So we really enjoyed that. So yeah, there's a few tunes and we're learning a few more as we go. We're hoping that by the end of this, we're going to finish in Newfoundland, which is about as close to Ireland as we can get. So we're trying to circumnavigate the globe fully. And we hope to have a good few tunes under our belts by the time we get to Newfoundland.
So far, describe what route you've taken so far, Mark.
Well, we've been heading east pretty much roughly since we started. So we started from the prom in Tremoran County, Waterford on St. Bridget's Day, and we headed for Rosslare and we got the ferry to France. And from there, we tried to get onto the Danube. So headed down to Germany, took a little detour into Switzerland and then followed the Danube down along the length of the Danube, took another little detour when we got to Romania and went up into Carpathian Mountains, where we had a couple of incidents with bears, but then got back on the Danube again towards Bulgaria, where we jumped off the Danube and onto the north coast of Turkey and followed the Black Sea all the way along there. Georgia, then Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, back into Kazakhstan, then into China. Down through China, caught a train for a bit of China because it's just so big, absolutely massive, the scale of China. And then into Vietnam, then through Vietnam into Laos, then into, I'm going to forget some of these countries, then into Thailand, and then we went into Malaysia, Indonesia, and we crossed the border in Sumatra, and then from Indonesia into Singapore, and from Singapore then we went to Japan.
Genie Mac, did you have any difficulties getting across borders or getting visas in advance and all that kind of thing?
We did. We nearly got arrested when we were crossing the border from Kazakhstan into Uzbekistan. You have to cross by train. They won't let you cycle across the border. So we had to get a train there. And in the middle of the night, the soldiers come on and they search the train. They take it very seriously. And we had some painkillers that we didn't have a prescription for. And they were taking it very seriously. They held up the train for about 30 minutes. There was a couple of soldiers and a couple of customs officers on the train. And then the head honcho came on and he looked at our passports and he looked at us and he said, Conor McGregor. And then he walked away. We were left standing. Yeah, and Some of your audience may not like to hear this, and we kind of cringe a little bit. But the name that we get said most to us when we tell people we're from Ireland since we started this is Conor McGregor.
That's mad. God.
It is.
Tell us about the Bears. What happened with the Bears?
We were in the Carpathian Mountains and we saw, like, we've been camping a little bit, camped a lot more in Europe than we have in Southeast Asia. And we get accommodation where we can. But we camped in a small forest up in the Carpathian Mountains that we thought wasn't attached to any other forests, wasn't part of a green belt. So we thought it was safe enough. Pitched the tent, got into the sleeping bags, where we were about to go asleep. And then we heard a roar coming from down below us in the woods. And then we heard another one answering it from up above us. And it was two bears kind of roaring at each other. So in the dark, in the middle of the night, we had to pack up all our gear, try and talk to each other very calmly, because what we read, what you do in a situation like that is make some noise, not enough noise that you scare the bears, but enough that they know you're there. So very frighteningly, we packed all our gear up and we got out of the woods as fast as we can when we heard those bears. And we read a report later on from a newspaper in that area, a local newspaper, that from that forest, there was a local bear that was going down into a zoo every night that was a few kilometers away and was helping itself to some of the animals in the zoo until they killed it. It was treating the zoo like a supermarket. So that was the forest that we had camped in that night.
Crikey.
So,
and do you know if those two bears, were they about to have a fight or were they courting maybe?
I don't know what they were doing. We weren't, geez, if they were courting, I was like, which would be worse, to get in the middle of them when they're fighting or the middle of them when they're courting? I don't know. But we didn't stick around to find out.
Yeah. And so I just, after a year of doing this, the two of you must be super fit at this point.
No, not really. And it's one of the things that Ellie was writing about, you know, that we're not athletes. We've never been in a cycling race in our lives. I don't know any Lycra. You know, we approach this, we go very slowly, Sean. You know, we are getting fitter. You know, and we cover about 100 kilometres, 80 to 100 kilometres on average a day. Now, the legs have never been so good. I have legs like Jamie Barron, the Waterford Intercounty hurler. But unfortunately, I have Paul McGrath's knees in the middle of them. And I have the knees he had before he had the operation.
And there's a thing called warm showers that you're members of. And is that where kind of people might put you up or at least let you use their shower?
Yeah, it's a brilliant thing, Sean. It's like couch surfing for touring cyclists. So there's a lot of cyclists around the world who travel long distance. And the idea is that if somebody comes to Ireland, they can stay with us. Or if we're in another country, we stay with them. And it's been amazing. It's a really wonderful way to get a sense of a country, to stay with people who are from there, who can tell you about the customs and tell you about things there and can actually bring you out and suggest routes. It's been amazing. And it reinforces one of the recurring themes about this trip. Something that we're finding time and time again is that the world is predominantly full of kind and generous people. Like every day we're coming up against this. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this is that if you just read the news or you read what's on your feed on social media, you'd never leave the house. You know, you'd think that the world is a dangerous place and everywhere is getting more dangerous as every day goes on. But what we're finding everywhere we go is that people will go out of their way to be kind to us, to help us, to give us food, to give us drinks. You know, Vietnam was amazing, you know, that you have ostensibly a communist country, socialist country. And it's really obvious what glues society together there. That one time we stopped, we had a puncture at the side of the road. And within minutes, there was three or four people around us helping us. And a young lad went off and didn't even tell us, just came back with two cold drinks for us as we were fixing the bikes. You know, the kindness we meet every day is blowing us away.
Mm. So after Japan now, where do you head to next?
Well, we have to cross the Pacific. So we're going for British Columbia. So Canada is next. And then we're a bit apprehensive about this because bears you can run away from. Humans are a different proposition, and we're going to be cycling across North America. So we go into the US and we're going to spend some time cycling across the US to get home in an effort to circumnavigate the globe. And America, we think, is going to throw up a whole new set of problems that we haven't encountered before, especially the way things are there at the moment. But that said, you know, in that theme of trying to find out about places for ourselves. It's going to be really interesting to talk to people on the ground in America at the moment and see what their opinions are of what we're reading in the news and what we're seeing on social media feeds. So we're kind of nervous and, you know, looking forward to that in equal measure to find out things for ourselves when we cycle across North America. And once we have that done, then it's back up into Canada and we'll finish in Newfoundland. Hopefully we'll be home for Christmas at the end of this year. That's the plan.
No doubt you'll encounter a kindness in the United States as well, notwithstanding everything that's going on there. When you get back, are you worried that you'll get back and go, I want to keep going now?
Yeah, not really. I think that one of the things that we're talking about are things we want to do when we get home. You know, that we, there are, it's kind of, there's two sides to it. The more we're cycling, the more we realize how much more there is to see. You know, we're only cycling in a straight line around the globe, that on either side of that straight line that we're cycling on, there's so much more to see and so much more to experience. But there are also a lot of things we want to do when we get home. There's a lot of time we have to make up with our families when we get home as well. And we're really looking forward to that. We're hatching plans for what we do when we get home. And all of this stuff that we're doing, we write about it every week. We have a newsletter online. It's www.spokeyokes.substack.com. And we post a video and an update of what we're doing and what we're thinking about and what we'll do when we get home on that blog every week.
Mark, more power to you and Ellie, and a happy Christmas when you get back. Mark Graham, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.